This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
97.1 FM Talk.
On-demand audio.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. Mark Reardon.
The heart of America is not government. The center of America is not Washington, D.C. The center of America is the neighborhoods where 330 million Americans are raising their kids and trying to put food on the table and trying to love their neighbors.
Mark Reardon.
There's nothing worse than a reckless jackass who thinks he's smarter than everybody else.
I am the smartest man alive!
The Mark Reardon Show is on now.
Well, good afternoon. We're going to have to start with the stock market because, holy moly, way up today on this news. I just had a friend that texted me. I don't think he was following the news, and he saw the numbers. I'm like, yeah, there's a little bit of a pause today. So the China tariffs increased 125%. There's an indication at this point, I think, that Trump's trying to lay a trap for them, and we'll get into that. The Dow was up 2,900 points. The NASDAQ jumped 12%. They have a 90-day reprieve. Sue, you've been busy in a studio. I don't know if you followed all this afternoon, but it has been a very, very interesting day. And, you know, obviously, we were down to, what, 38,000 in the market way up today because of the pause. President Trump is actually in the Oval Office right now. He's signing some executive orders. He may answer more questions about the tariffs. And by the way, we're going to get to Tashara Jones getting her ass kicked in this election, but this is kind of happening right now. And here's Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary.
Great courage for him to stay the course until this moment. And what we have ended up with here, as I told everyone a week ago, they're in this very spot. Do not retaliate, and you will be rewarded. Every country in the world who wants to come and negotiate, we are willing to hear you. We're going to go down to a 10% baseline tariff for them, and China will be raised to 125 due to their insistence on escalation.
Yeah, so China's going back and forth right now, and you kind of said the number is 125.
China is the most imbalanced economy in the history of the modern world, and they are the biggest source of the U.S. trade problems. And indeed, they are problems for the rest of the world.
So, and I think this is where Bessent sort of talks about maybe the trap here.
And all this was, again, this was driven by the president's strategy. He and I had a long talk on Sunday, and this was his strategy all along. And that, you know, you might even say that he goaded China into a bad position. They responded. They have shown themselves to the world to be the bad actors. And we are willing to cooperate with our allies and with our trading partners who did not retaliate. It wasn't a hard message. Don't retaliate. Things will turn out well.
So, yeah, and it looks like all of this is really a move to deal with China before having to deal with China a little bit later. But that's interesting today. And we'll, you know, if we've been encouraging some patience with all this, and there's been a lot of panic. I've even admitted that I'm a bit of a panickin. But
things have swung back.
Very strongly in another direction. We'll certainly track that. We have Brian Kilmeade coming up this afternoon in just a little bit. Well, Sue, I was giving you the early numbers last night, and then the final tally. Even the absentee votes made it very clear what was going to happen in this election. And here's Tish last night after the loss.
This campaign was powered by the people and was a movement of people. I'm so proud to have run this race because I ran it not for me, but for you.
I mean, if we're being honest, it wasn't a movement of very many people because you got your ass handed to you, 65% to 35%. And then she said this.
So my opponent will inherit a city that is safer than it has been in decades.
Are you kidding me?
Wait a second. No. That's, there's so many things this afternoon that I could use the Kenny Wallace laugh on, but let's start there.
Isn't that great?
And then there's Kara Spencer last night.
Today, St. Louis voted for change.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, and we're going to get change. I'm just not sure exactly what kind of change. But the other thing that's interesting, and I wasn't as confident even though she was, our Reardon Roundtable veteran, Donna Behringer, who wins the race against Darlene Green. She's on the line with us this afternoon.
Yay!
Donna, congratulations. I know how hard you worked. You were just out there every day, knocking on doors, very confident. So congratulations on the victory.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate it.
Well, I want you to kind of put this into perspective a little bit, how important this, outside of what happened with Kara, but how important this race was, because this will have an impact on the finances for the city of St. Louis.
Yes. The comptroller sits on the board of ENA, which is estimate and apportionment, and it is one of the three votes that decide everything fiscally, financially for the city. The budget, if we're going to have the Rams money go one way. So I told people, I said, then the second part of the comptroller's job is that they are actually the bank for the city. They're in charge of all financing for every single department. They sign off on all real estate transactions. Everything has to have a signature of the comptroller's office. So I told people, this is an important race. I want people to know that we need to, as we've been saying, we need to let people know that we want to move our city forward, and I don't want any more hurdles in place. And the other key thing is the airport. It's one of our biggest assets, and I will be at those meetings, and I will also be asking Jefferson City to help us because we're going to get a state-of-the-art airport. And I know that Kansas City just had theirs done, and I know that it's something that's going to happen, and I will be doing everything in my power to make it run smoothly and quickly.
Well, we have an embarrassing airport, so I'm glad to hear that that's a priority. You realized relatively early, though, I think, in the campaign, when you were knocking on doors and talking to people, that change was certainly in the air, didn't you?
I did. So from January until the primary, I had been door knocking nonstop, and people were all saying the exact same thing to me. So I knew people were looking for this. So that I knew. Now, I never knew I was going to win the race. What I was doing was feeling confident that people were going to come out. So it did kind of scare me in March because the numbers were so low, but that wasn't the case this time.
Yeah, so what were the numbers compared to March? Because it was it more than, 21% or even more than that?
I'm going to be honest with you, Mark. I have not read the paper.
I don't blame
you. You're the only phone call I've taken. And
well, I feel honored by that. I'll look into that. And I'm curious because I thought I saw maybe more people voted than maybe I expected. Look, I know you're tired. We're going to let you get some rest. I'm glad you checked in with us. You know, the path that a member of the Reardon Roundtable takes, there's two of them, Donna. You either go to federal prison or you advance in your career like Eric Schmidt. I think you're taking the latter, so that's good. We'll root for you. And congratulations. We'll keep talking about these important issues. So thank you very much.
No,
congrats, Donna.
Yes.
Except
we've
lost her on the round table now.
Well, I don't know. Have we lost you on the round table? Can we still have you on the round table? That's a curious. Yeah, we can't. Okay. All right, good.
Good.
Absolutely. Take care. Yeah, because we don't want to lose more people.
Oh,
certainly on that side. We don't have enough.
Listen,
anyway.
The word in the city was that Donna Behringer, and I know that we all know her, but she is a seriously hard worker. And I would hear this from both sides of the aisle. The thing about Donna is she will work and do it for the people, which is a nice change.
It's that Parkway West Longhorn spirit. That's what it is, Sue. All right. Well, that was great. And, you know, let me kind of go back to the mayor's race real quick here because, and I addressed this yesterday, I'm very excited that Tish is going because it just needed to happen. This was epic collapse. We'll talk about it a little bit later with Jeff Smith in the 5 o'clock hour. I was communicating with Jane last night. By the way, Fred, I do not have the right... This is last Wednesday's, I think. Isn't it? I have the wrong one. Somehow I grabbed last Wednesday's.
Well, here you go.
No, I have it. I have it. Oh, I know what happened. They
you
wrote
flipped it,
on,
it over.
You wrote
okay.
it on the back of that.
Yep.
Sorry.
Do you have another one? I'll take the other one.
Yeah, take
Thanks.
That other one.
Appreciate
there.
It.
Look... She was a disaster. She was terrible. This was an epic collapse. I was having a little fun on Twitter last night. You remember the headlines when Corey and Kim Gardner and Tashar were swept into office. Black girl magic. Well, poof. Just like that, they're all gone. Now, and also just like that, they're going to blame racism on everything. Vervis, or as Jane calls him, Virus Jones, the mayor's dad, deleted his Twitter account last night. Something tells me he'll be back because he's going to want to lay into people
of
and
course.
Blame race, etc. But, you know, somebody reminded me this morning that Kara is also the person that sued or tried to force a lawsuit when it came to renovations at Enterprise Center. So I'm under no, I get
Illusions.
That this is going to be right. Because, look, and I've heard from a lot of people on Twitter along those lines, too. She's still kind of a socialist and a progressive, and there's a lot of things that we're not going to agree with. However, I just have to have hope, because a lot of people are saying, well, it's not going to be any better. I have to have hope that it's going to be better, because I addressed this yesterday. One, she says city services are the priority. They have to be the priority. Why in the world they were not the priority with this administration, I have no idea. But they learned the hard way. When it comes to other things in the city, though, I think we're going to have, we're going to have to see where she's going to go. And I don't know where that's going to take us. I think that Donna, philosophically, is a little different than Kara Spencer, right? She's more moderate. What will that particular position and her relationship with Kara and the Board of Aldermen actually mean for the city? Look, what I want is the city to move forward. It's not. It's moving backward. Economic development is not moving forward. We do have some projects that in theory might take place, like the new Cordish development down, you know, near Ballpark Village at the Millennium Hotel. I'm still wondering if any of that's going to happen, because you have to realize those are developers that are going to want tax benefits, right? Well, is that something that the city is going to be able to offer up? I don't know. Donna just talked about it with the airport as well. You're going to have to work with the state. So some of this down the road is going to get very complicated. But how about we just start with this? Maybe not being embarrassed that we live or we reside in this region and in the city of St. Louis. So we're not the national joke when it comes to crime and things like that. That Brandon Johnson, the mayor of Chicago, the second worst mayor in the country, the first worst just got kicked out last night, that he comes to our city to campaign for that mayor. I mean, that was so representative and symbolic of where we are, wasn't it?
Not a clue.
Yep, but thank goodness. I was hoping she'd go a little nuttier last night, Tashara. She didn't really.
Yeah, you wanted to see the wig off.
Hey, there's still time for that. All right, Kilmeade's coming up here this afternoon. I have some amazing media bias stuff. This Jim Vanderhei, who's with Axios. Now, I should mention this. Alex Thompson, the guy from Axios, who's writing the book with Jake Tapper. Why Jake Tapper's involved, I have no idea. But Alex Thompson was a guy, and I had followed him over the years, that was out there in front of all the rest of the media when it came to Biden's mental deficiencies. On the other hand, Jim Vanderhei is not, and he's the guy that runs Axios, and he's out there on podcasts talking about media bias and how the media lost its way, when basically he was one of the people leading the media that lost their way. So that's pretty good. We'll get to that. We have Alex Rich in the 4 o'clock hour. I have what I think, and I don't think I'm going to undersell this, Sue. I have an amazing audio story to tell in the next hour. It was an article that I found this morning in the LA Times. It's quite fascinating, and it involves payphones and messages that are being left from payphones in Los Angeles. It's a little complicated when we get started, but I have audio samples that Ethan helped me pull this afternoon, and it's going to be extremely compelling. I know you guys are going to love it. I think the audience is going to love it because it's very different, and it's unique, and the audio and the emotion that you're going to hear from people, young people, older people, I'll set this up a little bit better in the 4 o'clock hour, but you're not going to want to miss that because it'll be good. I have confidence in that. Fred, what else we got? We have Adam Elwinger, who is down at the University of Houston, and we're going to talk about some things related to Donald Trump when it comes to communication. And I think, by the way, that's going to be extremely well-timed for today, given where we are with the tariffs. By the way, he's still going with executive orders right now in the Oval Office as well. And then Jeff Smith, former state senator, executive director of the Missouri Workforce Housing Association. He is also a roundtable veteran. He'll weigh in on everything relating to the elections. By the way, I didn't mention this. Prop B went down in the county, didn't it?
Yeah.
The county did not have a lot of participation when it came to, I don't know, look, I had mixed feelings on that thing. I voted for it, but I did have some mixed feelings. My bottom line was, look, I know that there's other municipalities in the area that have the ability to have 5 of 7 people say, wait, we don't want Sam Page to, you know, not fire this person. That's essentially what it was. It was kind of wrestling some control away from the county executive. Even James Knowles, who is the mayor of Ferguson, came on last week and was not a big proponent of that. All right, we're off and running here on a Wednesday edition of the Mark Reardon Show. Brian Kilmeade's coming up next.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code MAN at checkout. That's harrys.com, code MAN. Enjoy!
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
I've been working with a nurse dietitian for the last 6 months, and it's been life-changing. I've lost weight, healed my relationship with food, and have way more energy. Working with a dietitian online to create a personalized nutrition plan was so easy thanks to Nourish. The best part? I pay $0 out of pocket because Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. And I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah, we can also send you samples, fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Ooh, okay, whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 40% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
All right, just a quick traffic note, because we've been talking about the situation, which really is in my neck of the woods, 141 and 44 underneath the highway there. It's been closed, but now we think it's reopened soon.
Oh, it has been.
Okay.
And they did northbound first, and they were out doing southbound, just kind of waiting, but it was more water. But I just looked, and it's all open.
Well, that's going to help a lot, because when I was heading out there, I mean, the 270 exit to go, I guess that south, was just all jammed up. Then you get to Bowles, and that was all jammed up as well. So that's good news for, selfishly, folks who live where I do. I have this unbelievable media bias audio that I'm going to share here in just a minute. But we have Brian Kilmeade on the line for his weekly visit. Brian, how are you this afternoon?
What's going on, Mark? How are you?
Well, I'm good. We had a pretty amazing thing happen here yesterday, just to put it on your radar. I honestly think if the news cycle was a little lighter than this, it might make national news. But we had, you know, Cori Bush here in St. Louis. We had Kim Gardner, the prosecutor. I know you know probably her story. We had Tashara Jones. They were all ushered in the same election in 2020. It was considered black girl magic, Brian. That's what they called it. And Tashara Jones, our mayor, has just been kicked off. So the trifecta of those elected officials here in St. Louis, we have voted for change in the city, and it's really quite amazing. There was an incumbent comptroller for 30 years that went down to another person named Donna Berenger, who's a regular on my show. So pretty historic in St. Louis, actually.
Good. Hopefully people are sobering up.
Well, I think they are. And you know what happened? One of the things that happened during this, you know who our mayor, who just got her ass kicked, brought to town, Brian, to campaign and to try to convince voters that she was the right candidate? She brings in Brandon Johnson from Chicago. I mean, you can't even make this stuff up.
Biggest loser, most ineffective, radical around. I think he's got 18% approval rating. I don't know if that's even possible.
Well, that's kind of where Tashara was here in this city. But let's talk about what's going on in the rest of the world. There's been interesting movement on Wall Street today, hasn't there? Wow.
I haven't noticed. Yeah. Well, what do you say? Why do you bring up business? I have no idea. I mean, obviously, he put a pause on, and the pause has resulted in, just like everyone thought, a rocket ship. The market's over 40,000. And everybody except China. And China's urging everybody to leave us. So this is getting bad. I mean, they have soldiers in Ukraine fighting against Ukrainians, fighting for Russia. Russia's ignoring our peace overtures, the sincere effort we're making. And then China is basically, keep on going back and forth on tariffs. So we're getting to the heart of it. And the president's got 60 or 90 days to cut 75 deals, which most likely all will be better for us.
Yeah, he seems to indicate, and Scott Pessin, they've all indicated that there's a lot of phone calls that are coming in, and you would imagine that there would be. But it also appears like a lot of this is forcing the rest of the world to basically make a decision here on China or the U.S. So I don't know if it was technically setting a trap, but it was a bit of a trap, wasn't it? At least that's how it appears right now.
Yeah, I'm just happy when Scott Pessin is talking and not when Peter Navarro is talking and Mark Lutnick. He's very loyal to the president, but Scott Bessent is the one that could actually, like Steve Mnuchin, really calms the markets, understands the president, but also when he has to make a move, and I think the president listens to him. When I see Peter Navarro, I just see a total fraud, and I just think that he has got to go.
Well, yeah, so then that kind of walks me into the question, what do you make about the dust-up between Elon and Peter Navarro? My guess would be you kind of take Elon's position on this.
Look, he's seen him behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And he says he's a knucklehead. And the fact is, he starts defining the Tesla's business to the guy that created it. Really? He's a car assembler. He's not a car maker. Really? Do you have any idea what he did to make that car? How he designed it using F-150? I mean, Formula Ones, and use that and put the tech now. He knows every inch of that car. But what happens is, there's certain things we don't make. So he makes it in America. We got to import certain parts, Japanese batteries, things of that nature. Doesn't make you a car assembler. You are a car maker. GM, everybody's a car assembler, unless you have a ratchet. You know, when you're doing it yourself, it definitely has to come from, parts have to go from other places, which makes this whole trade war complex. But what kind of idiot are you to shoot inside the tent in a time like this? And that's what Peter Navarro goes on the shows over the weekend and says, we don't want any deals. The president said he wants a deal. What are you talking about?
Yeah, that doesn't help with the mixed messaging. I think that, that's not helpful. By the way, have you seen, Brian, the numbers for Tesla and how down he is right now? And I don't know where that's going to take him with Doge, but those are pretty significant hits.
Yeah, I mean, he's not that much lower than he was before before Trump won the election, when Tesla just boomed because of his access to the president. So I think it'll steady. The main thing is with Tesla, I think when things calm down and these idiots stop targeting the cars, is the breaks you're getting for buying electric cars, the mandates in these states that made you buy an electric cars. Trump is going to ease off on all that. And if the next president is a Republican, the same thing. So you can't honestly say that things look as bright because we're not going to be as forced to go buy them. But if you want an electric car, there's none better. China's put together something. They probably robbed a lot of the technology from Tesla, and they have something. They'll never be seen. They've flooded every market. They'll never be on our roads. But that's what I think can hurt Tesla the most. But for the most part, you might be buying Tesla less for the cars, more for the robots. Go on their website. Look at these robots. Understand what they can do and where they're heading. And it's not just working manufacturing. These are full-time nurses aides for seniors. These are aides, for parents, single parents. I mean, you got to see what these robots can do. That's where Tesla's future more than likely is.
Yeah, that's kind of amazing. I mean, there's a lot of, I've been kind of hiding in the dark, Sue, I don't know, on some of the technology, like even with some of the AI stuff on Apple. I don't know. I'm a little intimidated by it. The future is quite something. This has also, Brian, been a pretty good week for the president when it comes to the courts and rulings. And, you know, I think a lot of people may be rooting against him on the other side on that. But the Supreme Court came in without the help of Amy Coney Barrett and really helped in this deportation issue and beyond this week.
Yeah, I mean, that helped. You don't have to go get that guy back from El Salvador, number one. Number two, the whole Aliens Act gets to stand. It's going to be relevant. Stop picking the courts. You had no business in Washington, D.C., but this court case should have been brought to you in Texas. That's what the Supreme Court brought up. So no jurisdiction there. So I think the president's got, and also he's got the ability to get rid of 16,000 new hires he deemed as unnecessary to keep our federal workforce low and keep it back into the private sector. So that'll be a help. Obviously, I say that not to be callous for the 16,000 that no longer are employed, but that's what the administration wants to do. That's how they budgeted it out. Now, at least they get to do what they want. You know, the federal government should be controlled by the federal president. So I'm not really sure what a district court who was appointed by Barack Obama, how this judge feels as though they can make these policies. But hopefully these things are solving themselves.
Am I hearing, Fred told me this, I don't know much about it, you might know more, that Trump is meeting with the leaders of Iran this weekend?
Saturday in Oman. And it's going to be Witkoff. I'd feel better if it was Rubio. It's going to be Witkoff meeting in Iran, with Iran in Oman. So I have no idea why this real estate guy is doing all these deals, but he's not really getting anything done because he doesn't have any experience, doesn't know the history. I mean, you got to give it, you hire a Secretary of State for a reason. So I would prefer he be in there.
Whoop, we lost him there. That was one of those things where the line just dropped, right?
Yeah, I heard it.
Well, I think we're probably, I don't know, we'll see if Ethan can get him back on here. Because when that happens, I'm not sure if we're going to get him back. But that's okay, because I was going to kind of wrap with him here in a second. I did want to hear what was on his show for this weekend. I'll fill a little bit of time just in case we can get him back on the air. We have Sue's News coming up in the next hour. By the way, I've had this Diet Coke topic that has been on my mind for
right.
A couple of days. I keep telling Fred to put on the program sheet, it says, the fall of Diet Coke. That might be a little bit of an exaggeration, but I'll get to that when our friend Alex Rich joins us in the next hour. Adam Elwinger, after 5 o'clock. He's a professor of English at the University of Houston. He's been a guest on the show before. He's the editor of something called The Peerless Review. And he wrote a great piece on the president's communication and how that gets mangled from time to time. Brian, do we have you back? We just kind of lost you there. Just dropped.
Yep.
What's coming up on Sunday night? I didn't get a chance to ask you that. What's coming up on the show?
Tom Cotton, Jimmy Fallon, Bela will be definitely on with us. We're going to have the food babe talk about what the big march was towards the the MAHA movement, as you saw that RFK wants the three separate states and he's trying to streamline and make our food better. He also made a couple of big decisions. One, Ozempic and Mounjaro is not going to be financed by healthcare, by health insurance. That's interesting, Medicare, Medicaid. We're going to talk about that with them. And John Taffer is going to be on with us to tell about the real economy, how restaurants are dealing with everything, and he'll bring his own great personality to it. So it's going to be fun Sunday, 9 o'clock your time.
You know, on the topic of Jimmy, I have to mention this. I saw his tweet this morning. This was one of my favorites. I know that Stephen A. Smith wants to run as a Democrat in 2028, but he's going to have a tough time beating the front runner, Luigi Mangione.
It's pretty funny.
Sad. Very sad, wow. But true. Brian Kilmeade, thanks a lot. Thanks for checking back in with us. I appreciate it.
Go get him more.
All right, take care. 3:36. I have amazing media bias information to share coming up next. And it's very hypocritical on the part of this guy from Axios, but we'll highlight all that and illustrate coming up next. Ethan likes this song a lot, so I was going to play a little bit. I don't usually use this one with the first half of the song. I usually just use the back half at 3:20. The band is called The Beaches. But Ethan told me, he goes, I like that one. I want you to use it outside of the first segment. So I did that for my producer here this afternoon.
That's very thoughtful.
He's going to join us in the next hour, too. He pulled this audio that I want to share. It's really a cool story I found in the LA Times, and it relates to payphones. That's all I'm going to say right now.
That's intriguing.
There aren't a lot of payphones that exist, no. Right? Somebody came up with a very interesting, unique idea to put payphones to work, and it's kind of catching on with some people. So I'll share. I have really compelling, emotional audio that I will share in the next hour, and we'll get to some of that with Alex Rich from Y98. We have Adam Elwinger in the next hour to talk a lot about some of the things that happened with President Trump and communication and how people misunderstand some of these things. Certainly, I was one of those people in the past, if you go back 8 years. And then Jeff Smith's going to weigh in on the mayor's race at 5:25. So there was a there's a podcast out there with a guy by the name of Jim Vanderhei. Jim Vanderhei is one of the big shots over at Axios. He's the founder of Axios. Now, Axios is not really a right-wing outlet. It is more of a left-wing outlet. However, one thing I must say, and I think we even talked about this yesterday a little bit, is Alex Thompson from Axios, who wrote this book with Jake Tapper that's about to come out. There's two. There's Fight, and then there's this other one. You know, that goes into what happened in the last few years. Alex Thompson was a guy that was out there that was sort of leading the charge in this. And quite candidly, other people ignored him. But what's interesting here is that Jim Vanderhei, who certainly may now want to claim like, oh, yeah, I was just as interested in this as, you know, my reporter Alex Thompson was. Well, he wasn't. And I'm going to offer some proof of that here in just a second. But he goes on this podcast and he's talking about, you know, let's talk about media bias. How did the trust in the American media really happen? Now, this is something that I've been talking about for literally almost 30 years. Bernie Goldberg, former CBS veteran news guy, wrote a book in 1997 or 1998 called Bias and exposed a lot of this stuff. And I've literally been talking about media bias for decades. Now, it's gotten a lot worse. We know. But Jim Vanderhei has some theories about this. I'm going to share those with you, and then we'll reveal some of the hypocrisy here in a second.
I feel like the trust really started to shatter over the last decade. And I look at it as in three phases. The first was the creation of Twitter. What happened with Twitter is people forget, like now it's a lot of conservative voices, a lot of independent voices. It was a hotbed of liberal groupthink for a long time. And it was the first time since I've been in this business that I would get on a feed and I would see reporters who I had trusted, who I had admired, making it crystal clear what their views were, what side they were on. You could tell in what they were tweeting, and you could tell in who they were following and who was following them.
So that was an interesting point, because when I first heard this audio, I disagreed with him on the first part about how Twitter was this, you know, liberal bastion play. Maybe it was, but you had to follow those people to be. I didn't follow people like that. I followed people that I was interested in, and some of them were liberals. But I loved Twitter from the beginning because you can share a bunch of content. I thought that people were very creative. I still think a lot of people are very creative, whether they do it on Instagram or TikTok, even though I don't have TikTok or Twitter, because there's this creativity out there that was untapped before social media. Now, there's a lot of bad things about social media. Don't get me wrong, but there are aspects of it, even Twitter, that I still like today. But his point about the reporters being exposed is very interesting. You know, I've had a little fun here in the past year with what's-her-name over at Channel 5, the Asian anchor who's proud of herself because someone took a shot at what's-her-name. I don't even know. She blocked me on Twitter. Michelle Lee. Okay, but the criticism I had of Michelle was that she had her identifiers on her Twitter handle. Guess where those have gone, Sue, after the election?
Nowhere.
Bye-bye.
They've really? Gone.
But my point was, and this is what I tried to say to the news director over there, Art Holliday, who went to my alma mater, the University of Missouri Journalism School. I said, how can you have a reporter who is covering alphabet mafia issues, right? The trans issue here in St. Louis. How can that reporter be unbiased when they are declaring allegiance? And by the way, Michelle Lee didn't just have her identifiers. In a response tweet to me, she said, I proudly stand with the LGBTQIA LMNOP community. Wait a second. How can you fairly report on anything related? The answer, this is rhetorical, ladies and gentlemen. You can't, right? You cannot. But isn't it interesting that the identifiers are down? They were so important 6 months ago, Michelle. What happened? So Vanderhei's point on that is, I think, rather important. Yeah, there were a lot of people out there. It wasn't too tough to find out where they were coming from.
So I thought that was stage one, because at least before, any bias people had, they hid from the public. Now it was in somewhat full view. Then came along kind of the COVID, defund the police, word policing, where I think a lot of Americans were looking around and being like, that just doesn't sit right with me. And it doesn't, and the way it's being covered didn't sit right with them.
The way it's being covered, well, you weren't covering it. You guys never covered the trans issue until Jamie Reed came along here in St. Louis. That really was a big turning point. But even today, the sports media, ESPN's not going to cover, you know, all these trans athletes who are winning. They completely ignore that stuff. Most of the legacy media does. But real American people, here's what happened. You know, you want to talk about COVID. People realized what was happening to us, and the mama bears got real pissed out there about what was happening to kids in school. So I think COVID, not the coverage of COVID necessarily, but the actual existence of the lockdowns and all this stuff had a big impact on trust as well, even trust in the media.
And then I think the final straw really was the coverage of Joe Biden, when people were saying, hey, I can see with my own two eyes that the guy seems pretty old, probably doesn't seem capable of being the president in the next term, and yet there's not a whole hell of a lot of coverage of it. Alex Thompson, our White House reporter, just won the White House Reporting Award because he was one of the few reporters to write about the decline of Joe Biden.
So that's true, but I'm going to have a little asterisk here in a second. It is true, and I'll give credit to Alex Thompson.
And he got the hell kicked out. Exactly. Some of the very reporters who may have, you know, who will applaud him when he wins the award in a couple of weeks. If you go back and look at their Twitter feeds, there's a lot of people dunking on him and saying, oh, that's not actually true. And we're on the other ends of the calls from the White House saying that you guys are out on a limb. You're wrong. You're crazy, blah, blah, blah. And so I think those three things in totality really cemented the distrust that a lot of people have in media.
But Vanderhei wants to make it seem like it was just a few bad apples who lied to the American people, and that is certainly not the case. And by the way, it was well beyond what happened in the three issues that he, you know, addressed. It's Brett Kavanaugh and the Kavanaugh hearings. It's Covington Catholic. It's so many different things where the American people got wind of the fact that this stuff was not being reported accurately. It's also the rise of Joe Rogan and podcasts and people who were telling the truth in very different ways. And they were calling it like they see it. You know, because one thing that I would say is, if you're really thinking about some of this stuff in just the media landscape form, the guy that was holding everyone's feet to the fire on this for the longest time, and I do think that the latter years of his career weren't quite as strong, was Rush Limbaugh. Mm. But when Rush passed away, that opened the path even more so for a Rogan or people like that, because the alternative voices were out there, but they may not have been amplified as much as they were certainly in the last 5 years.
And you can go and listen to long form interviews with people and actually get a feel for them instead of what the media was telling you in a minute and a half.
Exactly. Now, that same guy that just sat there on the podcast and preached to you and told you, oh, you know, I knew this all along. You know, I was trying to tell people, here he is, Jim Vanderhei.
What we do, what journalists do, what you did in Mississippi, what Al Jazeera does in the Middle East, you proclaim yourself to be a reporter? Like, that's nonsense. Like, being a reporter's hard.
So what he's saying is that there are people on Twitter and other people who claim to be independent journalists, but they cannot be in that caliber of highly esteemed professionals who went to journalism school and things like that. It's too important, that role is.
Hard. You have to care. You have to do the hard work. You have to get up every single day and say, I want to get to the closest approximation of the truth without any fear, without any favoritism.
What?
You don't do that by popping off on Twitter. You don't do that by having an opinion. You do it by doing the hard work.
What's the hard work that they're doing? I mean, one of my favorite parts of that, Phil Klein on Twitter recognized this as well. The best part of the sanctimonious rant is when he uses Qatari-funded Al Jazeera as an example of a media outlet that does real truth-seeking reporting out there. But let's talk about the truth-seeking reporting that Jim Vanderhei is highlighting here and claiming that he was just a victim of as well, because I'm going to offer you some examples here. Here is Morning Joe. For example,
yeah, come on, slow clap, everybody. Whoa. First of all, I've got to say, extraordinary content. It needed to be said.
Yeah.
It continues to need to be said. When all of the garbage is flying around on social media, lying about reporters, lying about the hard work they do, lying about the hard work editors do, lying about everything up and down, about not only their alternative set of facts, but alternative set of facts about what people like you do.
Yeah, he's talking about people having alternative sets of facts.
But comparing that guy's mental state, I've said it for years now, he's cogent. But I undersold him when I said he was cogent. He's far beyond cogent. In fact, I think he's better than he's ever been intellectually. Analytically?
Yeah, so that's the same guy that wants to give props to Jim Vanderhei and all these reporters who are working hard when he's sitting there behind his desk with his wife every morning. Was he that ignorant? I mean, there's two things here. Either you lied to the American people and you were very aware that he was not cogent, or you were that ignorant and you weren't doing your job. So no scenario is good there. But let's offer some more examples. This is a guy by the name of Kyle Chaney, who's on Washington This Week on PBS, talking about some of these things.
Yeah. I kind of wonder, too, how much of this is driven. You know, Republicans on the other side have spent 4 years almost kind of weaponizing Biden's age against him. Trump is not that much younger than him, but we don't ever talk about Donald Trump's age.
You don't see it in the poll numbers either as much.
Right.
Why is that?
I mean that's a great question.
That's a great question. This is a campaign debate they're having. Why aren't we talking about Donald Trump's age? We're only talking about Joe Biden's age, really?
Because I don't think you've had this years of concerted effort. I mean, Donald Trump, they're running ads showing Biden tripping every five seconds, and I think that you know, creates an aura that sticks, that is sort of stuck with Joe Biden. John Trump has always been very good at branding his opponents.
What? Years of a narrative? Years of a guy who now we know needed fluorescent tape on the ground to figure out where he was going to walk. And then there's this guy here, Mark Leibovich, who is on, this is the same show on Washington This Week on PBS. He's with The Atlantic. There's no shocker. Here's what he says then.
You were warning early about Biden's age. Is there anything surprising coming out to you now, or is this kind of a story about a group of people around Joe Biden covering up for him?
I mean, I'm not really surprised. I mean, I'm surprised to the degree to which he has completely disappeared since the election. I mean, I guess it's sort of obvious that a lame duck president, by definition, will not be a factor, especially when someone who has such a big footprint as Donald Trump is waiting in the wings.
Hang on, I screwed this up. I'm just going to tell you this right now. I reversed these bites. So that was after the election. Here, this is the same guy, Mark Leibovich, on that Washington Week program saying this last year.
Can I just actually just point out, though, that, I mean, it's not just making an issue of Biden's age. It's lying. It's saying he's senile. It's saying he's demented. Saying he's out of it. I mean, I think it's important to sort of state for a fact that a lot of these are just smears.
Right. Mentally, he's quite acute.
Yeah. So those guys are on that PBS show 6 months ago. Say he's quite acute. This is all much ado about nothing. They're making this all the deepfake, and then they go on. Oh well, you know, we kind of knew this all along.
What the heck? I know,
it's ridiculous.
Get more at 971talk.com.
At MLBShop.com, you can get all the latest officially licensed merchandise for you and your family. But if you really want to level up your game, you can grab something for your dog walker, your Pilates instructor, your swim coach, your neighbor, your accountant, your gardener, your best friend, your bandmate, your boss, your kid's teacher, your mailman. Visit MLBShop.com and stock up on officially licensed on-field merchandise from your favorite teams.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.